Hi everyone, we are in the Sights On studio. This is the Sights On podcast. I'm Alex, I'm with my co-host Lucci, and today we're talking about for granted as Americans taking for granted what we have. Lucci, how would you like to start us off?
Yeah, so today we are going to discuss our origins, our parents' backgrounds here. My mom was from Vietnam, my dad was from Sri Lanka. They came from very humble origins. They had the least of the least in their countries, and they came here. They wanted to come here to this country because they knew they would have a better life. I'll discuss their stories later today, but we want to discuss how, as a country, we don't know what this country has. We, as a country, don't have the knowledge of our constitution, of our rights as citizens, as of what we have compared to other countries. And through our discussion, you're going to see how the countries that our parents came from are way in the rut compared to how our country is. We have so many opportunities here in this country that we should appreciate. And that's how we are going to start this episode. So, Alex, tell us a little bit about your story.
So when it comes to, as both of us having parents that came from immigrant, both of us coming from third world countries, and both of our parents being immigrants to this country, my dad comes from a country called Tajikistan, which if you want to look it up on a map, is about Central Asia, Middle East, but more I'd say Central Asia. And it is very poor in the sense of how its government is ran, how the people are treated, especially how those people are treated. Bless all their hearts that live out there. I'll always be praying for you and hoping that that country gets better. But my dad comes from a country that just is not managed well and has no opportunity for people to actually grow that are not in the government. And it's horrible to know that. But so my dad's story is that he comes to America because he wants a better life, but he starts off that he has an opportunity to come here by taking tests. He takes the first test. He does not pass it because he doesn't finish all the tests in time, so he fails. So then he goes on to take it the next year. I had to wait a whole year to take this next test. He passes the test. So then he goes on to the next part of it. He goes on to an interview. The interview, he has to think of something that's American to show that you have interest in going to America, that you have a want to go here. He can't think of anything, nothing on the fly. He sees a magazine that talks about Babe Ruth, and he talks about all things Babe Ruth, all baseball. What's more American than baseball, you know? So he talks about it to this interviewer. He wows the interviewer, as my dad said, he wowed her. She was super impressed that he knew all about Babe Ruth, especially someone that isn't even around at the time that they were talking about this. So he gets on that. He gets the exception. He goes to America. And he starts to get his education. He starts to learn. He comes down to Texas as he started from New York. And he originally he stays with one family. You know, some stuff goes wrong and he moves in with another family. And that family makes him have to pay. He has to pay a little bit to live there. He has to keep the yard. He has to keep the house good, you know, but, you know, he works hard. He gets jobs. He goes to school at the same time. And he figures out how he's going to do this, you know. And I think that's the main thing. Figure out how you're going to do this. Like, how are you going to succeed here in America? It takes planning, you know. You can't just come here and figure it out.
How much did he, how much did he start out with when he came here?
I don't know exact amounts, but I want to say, probably less than $1,000. So. Less than $1,000.
And he had to start from the bottom. He had to start where he had to get a job and get the financial resources to make him successful in his studies, and then apply to a job that he has never seen before.
Yeah.
In this country.
And I remember he actually he would work for like the schools, right? And he actually, they would see how hard he was working, and they actually made a whole scholarship for him because they knew of how hard he was working. It wasn't even much. It was $200, and even back then, I know $200 was more back then than it is now, but still, you know, you're working hard, people see that you're working hard, and they'll do things for you, like get you a scholarship, even if it's not much, $200, but it's still money going towards your education, you know, that helps, anything helps.
So. Definitely, so when he came in, what was his education level? Did he have any training in Tajikistan, or did he?
No, nope, it was just like a high school kind of. He graduated here, but it was just like a regular, you know, foreign exchange coming in. Did his high school? I think it was his senior year. He just did a senior year, and then he transferred over to a community college.
Wow, and how did he like transfer? And like, he had a language barrier, obviously, because in Tajikistan, they speak Russian?
They speak Russian. Russian. More Tajik now, but at the time, it was Russian because of the Soviet Union. You know, it was all Russian.
Yeah. So. I remember talking with him. We are buddies. We have a lot to get together. So we were walking, and he said that the language barrier was the hardest thing that he had to get across because he didn't know how to process things so fastly. Like in American language, we can talk so fast like this and we don't even know what we're saying. But some people, especially foreigners, they have to process slowly. And that was the one thing that he had so much trouble with. And he's gone over it now. Like
He's super good. Like if you met my dad, you wouldn't even think he was from another country. He speaks such good English that you're like, you know, just like us, like it's just perfect. It's like you wouldn't know that he was from Russia. You mm-hmm. wouldn't know. As you asked him.
Yeah. So it's humbling to see how much progress he's made because he started with nothing.
Yeah, and I'm super proud of him starting with nothing, and he's grown up. He didn't have to go through lower class, and then he built himself from lower middle class, and now he's up higher middle class.
What does he do now?
He does HR. Human I don't know resources? If I can say the company, but he does HR for a company, and he... does kind of an IT type. He fixes problems for the company and stuff like that. And that's what he has a degree from a UNT and just grew from there. Like IT and HR, I think. And he thoroughly enjoys his job and makes great money now. So super proud of him. We have a lot. Even if he is can be a harsh dad, I still love him. He's great. And super proud of him. Yeah, I should say it more, but I'm super proud of him. So, Dad, if you're listening, I'm super proud of you.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. It's a story where you come from nothing to something, and that's only made possible here in America. America's the number one place where people want to actually move in. People want to come from countries in Asia, from Europe, from South America. Everyone wants to come here.
South America, Africa, any continent. They want the North American continent.
Yes. Anyone wants to come here. Why? We have so much opportunity. I need to drive that point in. We have so much opportunity here. We are unparalleled to the amount of education opportunities we have. We have over 6,000 universities and colleges here in the United States. All of them are very good. All of them can further your advancement in the field that you want to choose. We have the freedom to choose our education.
Yeah, how far do you want to go?
How far do you want to go? What do you want to be? Nowhere else in the world can you have so many options to choose what you want to be. In third world countries where our parents and families are from, you can only choose to be a laborer, a peasant, a person who serves for the interests of the government. Yeah. You don't have the opportunity to make a podcast like you and I. You don't have an opportunity to become a doctor or a meteorologist in your case. We have so much opportunity here, and that's a very important point to appreciate here in America.
Yeah, the only way to rise up in those countries is to get involved into the government and to rise through the ranks of that, and that's not healthy mm-hmm. at all. Like, you want to be able to, maybe you don't want to work in the government at all. Maybe you want to just start a business, and you can't because the government's like, yeah. No, you're going to work on this farm.
Right. So. Yeah, and then I want to transition to my dad's story. He was born in Sri Lanka in 1971, and it's definitely a third world country. He lived in it's a middle suburban area inside Sri Lanka. There were a bunch of beaches around. Whenever I went there past recently, about 5 years ago, we could go to the beach from our house, but the house itself was a stone mortar brick house covered with a tin roof. Mm. And most houses are like that in Sri Lanka. Houses are not as... the architecture there is very poor compared to what we have here. And If you go out more into the rural areas, all you will see is metal tin huts. One wall, and another wall right above it. And it's just sad to see that people are just living in under tin roofs over there. And that's where my dad was from. He went to a small school, a high school, and he learned English, which was shocking because not many third world countries know English as a language. It's because Britain colonized Sri Lanka in the 1940s and 1950s, and that's where they got that influence. But yeah, he has two other brothers, two older brothers and an older sister, and all of them are here now. All of them are in the United States. My grandpa and grandma on my dad's side, they had the vision to send off their four children to the United States. And my grandma, when my grandpa asked, "Hey, what should we spend this money on? I want to get this new car because I haven't spent money in so long because it's hard to get money and he wanted to get a new car, right?" She was like, "Husband, I'm not allowing you to spend an ounce of that money. You are going to invest it in this plot of land that's right next to our house. And we're going to build this small annex so that we can rent it out and actually make a little bit of money and sell it in the future so that we can send our kids off."
Super smart, because as we know, cars depreciate, land always goes up.
Yeah, she did that, and 15 years later, she got that money to be able to send my older brother and not my older my dad's older brother, both of them, to the United States. She didn't have enough money though to send my dad off yet, so she used all of her stock holdings and sold them and gave my dad money, $1,200, to get a plane ticket over to the US and start his life. So he started here with $1,000 minus a plane ticket, obviously, and then went into Texas and started his undergraduate education at UT Arlington.
Do you think it took him a long time to get all that filing and work done to get all the documentation to be able to come here?
Of course, it took him a while, and when he got here, it took him even more time to get into the university, and he started in 1991. That was his first undergraduate degree, and it was tough for him. He had that $1,000, and he paid for his first semester, right? But he had other semesters to worry about, and there was no foreign aid, because in America we give our citizens aid first. So he had to work night hours, night jobs. He worked all night, literally all night. He only had 3 hours of sleep per day. He worked at a 7-Eleven and earned $12 an hour for so long. And
it's actually really good for the time.
Yeah, for the time it was really good. And the catch is that back in the day, $1,000 for a semester is a total bargain. Today, tuition costs are crazy. And that's another topic for another day. We'll discuss inflation. But back then, he could get the amount of money that he needed within 3 weeks for a semester if he worked hard enough. And he got the money and he paid for his semesters. He got his undergraduate degree in 5 years. And 5 years is amazing for a person who came from another country, right? He came in, did his work, got his degree, and then he started working.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to see how he started from nothing and now he has a degree. And then the next 20 years, he worked and he gained his living. He actually got a house. He came here and got the things that his mother, my grandma, envisioned that he would get in America. He got a life. He got his own career path.
Yeah. And what I like to say is, like, what a great mom he had to, like, envision that, like, hey, I need to get my kids out of here. They need to go to a better and greater country. Like, I'll do anything, sell everything I have, sell all my stocks, sell my land so I can get my family so they can have a better life.
Like, exactly. Exactly. And that's a theme. If you look at many people who come here as immigrants,
they give it all up.
They give all up. They give their whole lives up in the countries. They uproot themselves from their homelands to come here. And why here? Because we have the opportunity that is instilled in our values, instilled in our country, that people want to take advantage of. We are a field. We are a field that is fertile. If we plant seeds in it, we will get what we harvest. If you look at any other country, and in the world, if we plant something there, it won't harvest. Mm-hmm. In the third world countries, you'll plant it and it will just die in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it grows in countries like the European Union, it's unparalleled to what we have in our country. We have so many opportunities, so many places to grow. Anybody in this society can, if they put their hard work into it, they can move up in society and gain a living for themselves. And that's why we have to protect this country, and that's why we have to appreciate what we have.
Yeah. What would you say, like, before you switch off to your mom, though, what the quality of life, though, might have been like for your dad out over there, and why your mom so badly wanted to get him out?
So the quality of life, it was a time boggled in war. So there was this is a side topic, but it's a war between the Sinhalese and the Tamil population, and it was a very violent war, and many people in that country, they wanted to leave because it's not safe.
Yeah,
you can have a war, you can have a safe life, you can have a life nonetheless for in a country that has war.
Mm-hmm.
And the life conditions in there, like, it's a monsoon season every year. And it gets flooded, the house gets flooded, everything is wet, and you get disease often because there's not good medicine. There's so many people that die there just because of disease. And not just because of this spread of infection, it's because people get injured and they don't have the right health care to get to get treated. So, for example, my grandma, who passed away recently there, she was the one that sent my dad. She died of a gallbladder infection because she had surgery because she had gallstones, and she got an infection because of that, because of the hospital that didn't give good care. And if she had let that in, she would be still alive today.
Yeah.
In those countries, they don't have the proper health care for the citizens,
which is the great thing about the U.S. is that we do. You know that you're getting taken care of, like, you're not. I mean, there's a chance that you could die, but they're very, very small compared to...
We have a great health care. We have great health care abilities to treat our patients, to assess their conditions. No one is going to be left untreated.
Yeah, and we do it all by procedure, certain ways, so that way we know that it works and that we can save their life.
Yeah. And there's mass corruption. That's the last thing I'll say about Sri Lanka. There's mass corruption. The politicians want to take the money from the people. They made a fertilizer ban, and I will say this: the fertilizer ban. How do people grow food, Alex?
Fertilizer. Kill the weeds in that butt.
Yeah. Insects. They ban fertilizer, and how does that work? That starves the citizens. And when you starve citizens, they get angry, and that's what happened. The citizens uprooted the government. They stormed the palace of the prime minister in Sri Lanka, and took over power. But now it's swaying in that country because there's no dominant authority saying, oh, we should do this, we should do that. And now China's coming into the country and trying to sway trade and get interest into the country. So right now it's a very sad situation for Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
And that's very much why my grandma wanted my dad and his brothers and sisters to move out.
Yeah. I would just say, before we get to your mom, I'll talk about the quality of life in Tajikistan, but from going over there just last year, having a pretty refreshed mind of it, it's just very poor, and the main thing is that it's the corruption of government there, that you have no rights to fair trial, you have that there's no opportunity there to grow, there's no economy there that grows, there's... nothing out there really for you. And the quality of life for the people, as I kind of missed that part just now, but the quality of life for the people is very low. They may be very nice and generous people, but their quality of life for most of them, especially outside of city, is mud huts and their own farming. I forget, almost like their own substance, you know, just enough for them, but it's not enough to ever grow or get out. And they're always going to live in these mud huts and get water from the streams. And it's very sad to see that they're, you know, it's over there, it can get extremely hot. And so these people are just living in mud huts all day, getting their farming, getting their food, their water, and just barely surviving in a way. Not a fun way to live, you know, especially in the day and age we live, where we know, like in America, that you can have all this, you know, this nice house, internet, AC, you know, compared to someone over there that's living in a little mud hut shack and barely living off anything, and the government's not going to help them.
I remember we had a discussion before. You said that the government, if they do something to you or anything happens to you, you have no protection.
Yeah, there is no, like, nobody out there is going to protect you in court. There is no court system. It's basically you versus the government if it is in court. There is no, like, oh, that person did something to me, I can sue. That doesn't happen over there, you know, like, you're all on your own. If you want justice or something, you do it yourself. And that's at your own risk, because then the government would get involved if you do something. You know, the government wants to make sure that you're not breaking the laws in its own way, because they don't need you rebelling and going against the government, causing problems for them. So, you know, you may want your own justice, even though that person broke the law against you, the government's still going to say, hey, you can't do anything, really. Like, no, don't break our own rules, even though. So, but just quality of life, very, I would say, poor, you know, as my grandparents still live there. I love them, but, the government wants to destroy their apartment, but the problem is my grandparents, they live on a 4-story apartment and they can't get all their stuff out, and you can't really pay anyone to move it. You'd have to pay them so much money to move if it was like just random people off the street to come help and move it. And that would be like so much money, which is the currency over there. To move into a high-rise apartment that is, I don't know how many feet high, like thousands of feet high. And they just can't do it, but the government doesn't care. They're like, hey, we're not going to really compensate you besides with an apartment that's, and we're not going to help you move anything, even though we know you're about 70 to 80 years old. We don't care. Figure it out on your own, you know. And so that someone, problem like me, is like either my dad or someone will have to go over there and help them, because no one else will. And here in America, there is always some way to help. And our government wouldn't do that to our people, you know, forcing them and then not helping them. You know, we know people's struggles and we help. So
we have a lot of resources to help our citizens. We have so many welfare programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. These two things are somewhat of a controversial topic that we will discuss in the future, because We need to discuss why we have these and how they affect our economy, our society. We'll discuss these in later episodes. But we have a lot of outlets for our citizens to get help.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have Social Security for when you get older. We have all kinds of things that can help elderly people. And again, that goes again with the quality of life. It's just for anybody, any age there, it's bad. Like, I'm not saying you can't buy food or anything there. Like, when you go to the supermarkets, there's food. But the amount people are paid there, I mean, people, there's child labor if you really go out into the farms, and those people, not the kids probably get paid even less than $2, but the people that work on these huge farms that grow watermelons or whatever veggies they're growing, they make like $2 a day, and they live in some little shack, and they make nothing, and it's awful. And if you don't, I mean, people in the city make probably a little bit more than that, but it's still pretty bad for all of them.
Yeah, it's troubling to see how much we have and how much they don't have. Yeah. It's troubling to see that the difference that we have is so great, and we need to appreciate what we have here.
Yeah.
And
it's a big eye opener. I think
it's a big eye opener
for both of us going to those third world countries, and you see it, you're like, whoa, I didn't know I had life this good until I went there.
And just to be succinct, I've been to Sri Lanka about 5 times and Vietnam about once, and I've seen a lot of what dirtiness, what uncleanliness looks like. I've seen what corruption looks like too, and how the public transportation is horrible. Streets are packed, roads are not organized. Let's talk about roads. We have one of the most organized roads in the whole country, world, because now anybody can go on the road and get to where they need.
Yeah, you can go all the way across the United States one way to the end. Yeah. Like, and it's going to be a paved road. It's going to be a highway system, you know, super advanced system that most countries don't.
Yeah, our infrastructure is top line compared to other countries. We have the best infrastructure in the whole wide world, considering that we have one of the largest land masses
here. Oh, yeah.
It's distributed across the whole land mass. We have the best infrastructure, best transportation, best public facilities, best best like buildings, best architecture, and we're unparalleled in that. But going back to, let's go transition to my story, my mom's story about Vietnam.
Tell me more about that.
She was born in the Vietnam War era, and she saw firsthand what was happening. It was outplain, and the system there was communism. And when she described it as outplain, horrible, outplain, disgusting, outplain, torture, what they did. The communists, they want to have full control over the government. They want to spread fear into the citizens. My mom and my parents' family never had a point where they felt safe inside the country during that period. They want total power, they want money, and they're totally corrupt because they want to have all the power for themselves. And these leaders, these Vietnamese people in power, they imprison people for speaking out against them, even if it's a small thing. Even if it's something that does not agree with them, even if it's small, they will imprison the person. These people, they live off the government. They have no say in the government. They do not have rights. They do not have anything that pertains to freedom inside their homes.
Yeah.
The only freedom they have is the freedom to, like, do things like go to the restroom or eat something that they farmed off their land.
Or do something for the government, right?
Or basically, do something for the government. And even the things that they farm off their land, they have to turn into the government. None of the production that they make is theirs. Nothing that they make with their own hands is theirs.
Yeah.
And that's the essence of communism. Communism and socialism is anything that I make is everyone's.
Yeah.
Everything that you make is not yours. It's everyone's. And how does that work? How does that give me motivation to actually produce something that will make a profit or benefit me in the future? Because I need to make a living and I need to make money for my family and produce food and house and shelter for them.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to get that if I don't make profit? So I'm not going to make anything. I can probably do something another way. And that's what most people do. Most people go off market in Vietnam and they sell things behind the government's back. They don't report things to the government, because if they do, they'll have to pay a certain amount in taxes, or they will get some goods confiscated of their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom's story is that she didn't want, her parents and her didn't want to put up with this, so they took the family. And one day, they got into this boat about 25 yards. And the family's big. Vietnamese families are big. They have so many kids. I'm not kidding. Like, my mom's family is about 8. And her prior generation was about 10. And then you see how many people branch off. So it was a big family.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this 25-yard boat. Long boat. Very long. And it's spanned that much because we had to fit 100 people in it. 100 people in this long boat, and it's a wooden boat that's very long. And we put in the water, and she gets in with her whole family. And it's daytime. She's now going out in the ocean, and then problem happens. All these other Vietnamese people in the water, they jump on the boat, even if there's no space, because they want to get out of the country, like they are doing. no one wants to stay in that country. No, everyone wants to leave because they see how much terror there is and they want to get out.
Oh, yeah. Especially at the time with all the war going
on. Yeah, and that, the problem with that is that that whole boat was about to drown.
Yeah, sink.
And it was about to sink. My parents' family, my mom's family was like, please, get off. We don't have enough space. If you don't, all of us will drown. And people were stubborn. They didn't get off. So you can't do anything. You can't push someone off, right? So my parents made an exception and said, all right, if you stay here, we'll ration our food and we'll try our best to make it to Hong Kong. Hong Kong was the point where people could say that they're safe because it was controlled by the British at the time. And they got into the sea and they were in the sea. And that night, these people, because they're hungry as well. Like, you have to understand that these people, they're also starving. They took the food and rations and the water. They ate everything.
Wow. That's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone would do that. You let them on and then they eat everything you give them.
Yeah. They ate everything. So 100 people stranded at sea on a boat. And for 2 days straight, they had nothing. So my mom's little brother, who was 2 at the time, my mom was 14 at the time, he began crying and he was super dehydrated. And my grandma, she didn't want him to cry anymore. She let him drink the seawater. He had diarrhea straight after and died that day.
Horrible.
So it's tough to see what people from those countries go through. And that day, that second day, was the breaking point. They were going to die. But lo and behold, the third day, a big whale, the size of almost a big yacht, comes and pushes the boat all the way back to shore.
It's crazy.
And it pushes it back to shore, back to Vietnam. And the whale comes and dies on the shore. And the Vietnamese people, they eat anything. So they come and get the whale and have a feast. Uh-huh. But when my parents came back to shore, my grandpa was imprisoned. Mm-hmm. My grandma was also in prison, but she was released because she's a woman. And then my mom went to live with my grandma. 1 year later, they come back and they try to escape again. Mm-hmm. This time they do it at night. And they're successful. My mom is successful with my grandma and the whole entourage of family. But my grandpa was in prison for a little bit longer and he followed afterwards. So they went in the night, escaped, and went to Hong Kong. Gunshots in the water behind them because it's very dangerous to patrol. And then they get to Hong Kong, which is a 7-day journey. Mm-hmm. And then they settle in as refugees. And my mom starts school in there. She learns English, not well at English, but she learns it. And then when she's 18, she goes and she's shipped off by the British to Canada. And then in Canada, she gets her undergraduate degree. And then she's like, I want to go to the USA because there is mass opportunity there. Yeah. And she applies for a job in Texas. She gets it and she comes down to work as a chemical engineer. So she does a lot of chemistry for her first job and she applies for her green card. She gets the process going and that's starting in 1997. That's she awesome. Actually gets to start her green card. And now she goes in and starts the process and works hard, gets her job going, and then meets my dad at the same job. Because they both apply for the same one. And then they get the process going. And they get married, get their green card, then have me. And then they have the opportunities. They reap the benefits of this country. They got this house right here because of this country.
Yeah.
They worked hard, made money, and made a life for themselves. This house right here is about 200,000 square feet. It's amazing to see how they started from nothing. A little girl from Vietnam a little boy from Sri Lanka. They came here to a country that has so much opportunity, and they could plant their seeds and harvest out of it. And that's something we have to appreciate. This country is so good. The things that we have here, we have to appreciate them. We have to learn what we have. And this story shows that if you work hard in this country, you will get what you need.
Yeah. Should we go on to discussion?
Yeah. So our stories show that we have many opportunities here. Let's discuss education. Here in America, we have one of the broadest education systems in the whole world. We have over 6,000 universities here. Mm-hmm. We have the opportunity to go to any college we want, ever.
And you can choose any level of education you can start. You can go all the way up to a doctorate. You can go, I'm sure, even further if you really wanted to. You can go into many different degrees of education. And I mean, I'm sorry, I think I said that wrong. But you can be a doctor and, like, if you wanted to be a professor for something, you could. You can do two jobs at once if you really want to. That's super hard, but you can. You don't have to be stuck to one job, one thing. You can do multiple jobs. If you want to be in the army, and then maybe you do want to do, like, again, a doctor, or maybe you want to be a scientist of some sort, you can. You can do multiple jobs here. And in other countries, I mean, yes, in the Europe and stuff you can, but, you know, in third world countries, that's just not possible. You have one job, and it's usually not that great of a job.
Yeah, we have choice.
Yeah.
We have the freedom to choose. That's very important. We have freedom in this country. In other countries, they don't have freedom. We don't have freedom in other countries. We have the freedom to choose what path we want to go through. We have the freedom to choose how much we invest in our time. We have so many aspects of education that benefits our society, it benefits our systems. We need to focus on how much we can appreciate these things, because if we look at our economy, we have one of the strongest economies in the world.
Yeah, and going on strongest in the world, we have the strongest militaries in the world as well. And from it goes to from education to our healthcare to our economy to our military. People take all of this for granted all the time, especially people that are born here. And I think it's the entitlement that makes it that we forget everything that we have here and how, like, grateful we should be for it. But we just like, eh, it's America. Like, we were born with this, you know. It's, you said it earlier, it's what was it called? You called it
American privilege.
American privilege. Exactly right.
American privilege, where we think that we're entitled to the things of this country, but we have to remember, we did not make this country. We inherited this country from our forefathers. Our forefathers made a constitution that made us able to reap these benefits. They explicitly stated in their constitution that all men are created equal. What does all men created equal mean? It means that you and I can discuss at a table right here across from each other, that we can, different races, different skin colors, ethnicities, we can discuss, we can have disagreements, but we don't fight it out.
Yeah, we don't discriminate. We don't tell them, well, you don't just agree with me, I'm going to take your rights away. You know, we don't do that.
Yeah. And we have peaceful, we have logical discussions. We have things that improve our country through just means. That's what our constitution set up. We were actually the first country to actually put in our constitution that all men are created equal.
Yeah.
We set this vision, our founders set this vision so that our country would move in the right direction.
Yeah. And even if it didn't always start in the right direction, slavery, Jim Crow, in 2024, we fixed problems. No country starts off perfectly. We have not had always a perfect history. This country split up for quite some time into two different countries, but we brought it back together. We fixed it. You know, we've been through so much, but at the end of the day, in 2024, we have fixed those problems, you know.
Yeah, if you go back 60 years, this wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah,
because back 60 years, it was 1964 when we had the Civil Rights Act, 1964, that gave Black Americans the right to the rights that they have today to vote, to be, have actual discourse in public. And we made so much progress because of that one clause in the Constitution: all men are created equal. If we follow that, and if we actually make that and learn that, this country will continue towards progress. And
same towards, I don't mean to cut you off, but same towards women. You know, we didn't have rights for women. There's countries in today's world that don't have rights for women. And we've strived and we've fixed a lot of that, you know?
Yeah. No other country, I can say this, in the world that has ever done things for its citizens as the U.S. has.
Yeah.
The U.S. fights for its citizens. The U.S. gives rights to anyone and everyone. It doesn't matter who you are. You have rights in this country. And if you are a citizen, you know, the United States will protect you.
Yeah.
I can't say that for any other country, I know. Oh, yeah. Because people over there, people in other countries, even in Europe, they do not have the rights we have. They do not have the freedom of speech. They do not have the freedom of religion. They do not have those things, because even if you say they are, like, implicitly, they do not have it, because people are afraid to speak in those countries. And even here in the United States, people are getting afraid because, frankly, people are fearing what their opinions might believe, because they're afraid they might lose their jobs. They're afraid that they might lose opportunities in the United States. But here actually is the only place that you can speak freely about what you believe.
Yeah.
And that's special. We should appreciate that, because once that is gone, we won't have a country. We need to protect that.
Yeah. And I remember asking my dad about opportunity and like what he thought people were taking for granted. And it was opportunity. He said that, you know, able to get a job, able to work wherever you want, able to create something, you know, bigger than yourself, and grow a family, start something, you know, big, you know, for like your generations, you know. And it all here, the opportunities with your jobs, the military, the protection that this country gives with not, you know, countries don't mess with America. And if they do, they'll figure out real quick that they shouldn't have done that. You know, but there's so much, that was the point, that people, if they were going to learn anything, is like the opportunities here are endless, and that we can grow from anything, especially once you get your seed and you just turn into like a big oak tree, like you grow.
So like the parable of the mustard seed.
Yeah.
Something so small can grow so big here in America. And it's the only place I can do it. I truly believe that, because if we've seen from our parents' generations, it's not possible in those nations. It's not possible to start up something, even start up a business, and get it to be in a global scale. Like, if you look at, if you go off the top of your head, what are the seven, like, what are the major companies that you know?
Apple, Amazon, let me think of, like, probably, like, Dell, Nike, you know, think of any major brand, and it's most likely, there's a couple that are in Europe, but most of them started here. Can you name me any?
Starts in here.
Let me ask you, is there any country from Sri Lanka or Tajikistan that you can think of?
No. Is there anything from the European Union that you can think of off the top of your head without thinking?
I can only think of Adidas.
But
that's it.
There's not. That's one exception. America has so many companies that you can think of off the top of your head. Yeah. Meta, Apple, Microsoft, Tesla, all start here.
Google.
These companies start here, and it's because we have such a rich foundation. This foundation will be a proponent to many citizens, all the citizens here, that can take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, we will continue to rise as a country, and we need to protect it.
Yeah.
And we need to appreciate it. We can't take it for granted.
How do we fix that ungratefulness, though? Like, how do we fix the problems?
Yeah, so ungratefulness starts at a root. So whenever there's a root, same analogy from a seed, that you can grow good crops. The same fertile soil, you can sow a seed of bad weeds. and these weeds grow up in the soil. We need to uproot these weeds and take them out and replace them with good seed. We need to
we have to show people, you know, what they should be grateful for, because I think a lot of time we've just forgotten what we've given everybody here. I think we just everybody's like like, but you should be like, whoa, that's thank you. I think we need a lot more thank yous, and instead of like
and we have in our schools, it starts with our schools, because in our schools we just came out of high school, and when we were in middle school and even in elementary school, up until middle school, we were mandated to actually pledge the allegiance.
Yeah.
So, like, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one state, one nation under God, indivisible, for liberty and justice for all. We were mandated to pledge that because we wanted to instill a love for this country in our roots.
Yeah.
Now, it's not the case. Anybody can sit down for the national anthem. We are citizens of this country. We should love our country. We should pledge allegiance to the one thing that unites us all.
Mm-hmm.
It's our country. It unites everyone that's a citizen. We should pledge allegiance every day. The second thing in schools is that we are not as strenuous and rigorous. We're not as complete in our education of our U.S. history.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, when we were in high school, we had U.S. history, and what they did is the teachers, he gave a slide presentation. He said, you have to memorize these points about how the government works and how these random history points are made. How is that going to help us appreciate what happened?
Yeah, we got to show the people.
We got to show the people.
Like, show me a PowerPoint and be like, yeah.
So we need to show the story. We need to tell the story of how we had the revolution, how we gained independence, and how our founders made the Constitution, how they decided to not, how George Washington decided not to take power and become a king.
Yeah.
He wanted the people.
He had no party. Become, there was no party, you know, at the time.
Yes.
No Democrats, no Republicans, no Federalists.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, George Washington, he wanted the people to become presidents. He didn't, he could have took power and said, hey, I want to be the king of this country forever. Everyone in my lineage is going to be my successor. Everything that goes to this country is through me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing what Great Britain has done. And that's the same thing with all the other monarchies that oppress people because they have the power.
Yeah.
George Washington is like, no, I want this country to be people-based. The people will represent the country. The people will make up the country and make up the laws. We make up the laws, not the lawmakers, because we send representatives up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we participate. That's why voting is so important.
Yeah, the people that's another thing. We didn't even mention it, but the right to vote, pick
right
someone.
To vote.
And you don't get killed for who you pick, you know?
Yeah, we get to pick who we get to who represents us. That is really important. So many countries, dictatorships, monarchies, third world countries, they have people, one person leading for their entire life. Tajikistan, that guy's been there for 30 years.
His son will take over.
Yeah. In China, these people have been living their lives as leaders. And that just makes it hard for the citizens to even get anywhere because they don't have a say in the government. United States, anybody can make an impact.
Yeah.
You can become a senator. You can become a president. You can become a House representative. Mm-hmm. You can start movements, grassroots movements, to change the country into what you think it is, should be. So America is the only place where the people have the rightful discussion. Yeah. Maybe some European Union nations, but it's unprecedented, unparalleled to what we have here.
Oh yeah.
We should appreciate what freedom we have, what right to vote we have. We should appreciate everything that we have that we can discuss, and we can actually
have the right to a fair trial,
make a change, you know, in this nation.
You know, like I said, right to fair trial. You have lawyers, you have so many jobs, you have, I guess, the ability to live fairly also in America. Compared to most countries, you know, something happens to you, you'll have the trial a fair judge, you'll have everything there to, at your disposal to help you win that case.
Yeah, and I'd even add police officers. In the United States, we have men and women who dedicate their lives, risk their lives to protect the citizens. These the people, because mm-hmm. they were put in place by lawmakers, and the lawmakers were put in place by the people. The people hire or make up who's the lawmakers, and the lawmakers hire the policemen. So these policemen, they serve the people. They don't serve the government. In many other countries, they just serve the government. They serve the leader's will, and they terrorize the citizens. They terrorize the people.
Yeah.
And imagine that you and I, we have an issue in another country, and we need the police to come in and sort this out. They won't do that because okay. they are just under the orders of one man, and there's no checks on that one man.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the United States, we have checks on every branch. We have checks that make sure that every branch has its limits.
Yep. And checks that and makes balances.
Checks and balances. And that makes the police officers a servant of the people. Yep. The lawmakers, servants of the people. The president, the ultimate servant of the people.
And we hold everybody accountable for yep. everything they do here.
So we as a people, we have a say. We have the right to participate and change this nation. And that's very much why we should appreciate America according to comparison to other nations.
Yeah.
So the last question I want to discuss today is how do we instill patriotism, the love for this country, back within our citizens? Because a lot of people complain. A lot of people don't know what we have.
They don't want to be patriotic. They want to be like anti-patriotic, yeah. patriotic bad, you know.
They want to be against our country. So how do we instill patriotism, that love for the country, that we could die for this country? How do we do that?
We have to show people the right way, I think. And I mean, just show. You don't force, because force doesn't get you anywhere. You force anyone to do anything, they'll never do it. You know, we have to show people our views, our side, and show them like why it is this way and how, like, the reasons that it's important to this way. Because, and my main thing I'm even going to is, we have to show that the love for this country and why we have to love this country. Like, we need to show that you can be proud of this country. We've gotten to a point in America where we cannot be proud of the country that we love and support. That's considered bad. And that's just not the right way to take it. Even if you're not proud, that's not the way it should be being taken. You know?
Right. So, I believe it starts with our education.
Mm-hmm.
If we get our education system corrected and actually teach people, show them the way, show how much we have in America.
Yeah.
How much we have that others don't. And discuss with people who do have opposing views, have conversations, instead of just like being so polarized, not talking to each other. Because a lot of people in today, we don't talk to people on the other side of the aisle. So if I have a polarized viewpoint, and you have a polarized viewpoint, we wouldn't talk because yeah. we are threatened. We're threatened by the other people. So we need to talk and
yeah.
actually discuss our ideas so we could get the actual thing straight.
Yeah, even though we, you know, it offends us in our brains a little, and even if you, like, we have to be able to talk and discuss and possibly have a changed mind, possibly. You don't always have to change, but it's good to be able to look at the other side and just discuss, talk, and find common ground, you know?
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say is it starts in the roots.
Yeah.
If we uproot the bad weeds and we place good roots in there, we will reap a plant that is fruitful. So we need to, we'll become parents in the future, we'll become dads. When we have our kids, we need to teach the son, we need to teach him how to love this country. We need to teach our daughters how this country has given so much for them.
And what they can get from this country.
We need to teach them the Constitution, what rights we have, what rights the government does and does not have, how the government can and cannot overstep its bounds what limits does a citizen have? What benefits does a citizen have? How can the citizen participate? We need to teach our citizens
how to protect their rights.
We need to teach our kids how to protect their rights. We need to teach our kids how this country has given so much to them and how they can contribute and benefit from the country.
Yeah.
So this is a main issue of today's society. We need to focus more on how we can educate and we inform the population about how America is great. So we need to find a way to stop taking America for granted.
Yeah. And I'd like to just ask the audience, like, if you are, what you are grateful for, and if you tell me what you're grateful for, and if you're not grateful, if you can't find anything, I want to know what, you know, what are you not grateful for? Like, what are the problems? But if you can just, I ask you, just find one, tell me one thing that you're grateful for. There's got to be something out there in this country that you're grateful for, that this country has brought, given, or just has for you. And we would just love to know. Lucci, is there anything you'd like to end before I end the podcast?
Yeah. If you have any questions, shout us to us on our Instagram, Sights On Podcast. And we are going to go into further episodes about America. We are trying to detail about what you should know, what American citizens should know. We are going to go through the Constitution, our economy, inflation, mm-hmm. our Medicare and Medicaid,
all things
our
America. Medicines,
all things America. We're going to go through that in the next episodes. We are going to share our sights. We are two college students on campuses in the United States, and we want to share our aspects of how we've experienced college so far. And we are very passionate about bringing the American perspective of what America has to offer to you guys. So whenever we express something, we are passionate about it, mm-hmm. and we want to share what the benefits and the cons are. We will share both sides, and it's a dual membership. So the Sights On Podcast will continue to have episodes on America for the next couple episodes, and we are very passionate about this.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. I just want to say thank you to all our supporters, our families. It's taken a lot to get this first episode out. Thank you all so much for listening. This is Sights On, signing off.